You're listening to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, where we teach you everything you need to know about adopting a plant-based diet, full or part-time. Our goal is to empower you to live a long and healthy life. You can find today's show at ordinaryvegan.net or on iTunes. If you have any questions, please send an email to questions@ordinaryvegan.net.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast. Number 36. If we haven't met, my name is Nancy Montori, and I advocate a plant-based diet to assist you in living a long, healthy, and high-quality life. A life full of energy and free of disease. A compassionate life that is kind to animals and the environment. And what goes around comes around. And when you put out all that kindness and compassion into the world, it will come back to you in all kinds of beautiful ways. I promise. Many of our conversations on this podcast are about nutrition and the value of a plant-based diet for your health. But today, I want to get back to the basics and teach you how to get more organized in your plant-based kitchen and help you learn new techniques and achieve new flavors. Also, how to properly cook your grains, your legumes, and your spices. I am breaking this up into two parts, and today we will focus on what should be in your plant-powered pantry and how to make the most of those ingredients. Also today, I'm going to answer some commonly asked questions from a few of you about a plant-based diet throughout this podcast. So let's get started organizing your plant-based power-packed pantry, and it all starts at the grocery store. One of the most exhausting aspects of cooking a healthy plant-based diet can be shopping for ingredients, and even navigating the grocery store can be overwhelming. Personally, I love going to the grocery store, but I don't love throwing away food that I don't use and it ends up going bad. So, always make a list and stick to it. Stores are purposely designed to take you off track and encourage you to buy more than you intended. They do this by the location of products. For example, the milk will never be next to the front door because many people run into a grocery store specifically to purchase milk, and the grocery store wants to make sure that you pass as many other food items on the way and possibly buy them. Also, I don't know about you, but I always have to literally climb the shelves to reach the cans of cooked beans because they are always on the highest shelf. That is because grocery stores put the most profitable products at eye level, and you will most likely see the most highly processed foods like cereal at eye level and the less processed items like oatmeal way down below. One way to navigate the grocery store is try to stay around the perimeters where they keep the whole unprocessed foods and avoid the middle aisles that keep the highly profitable, unhealthy processed foods. Also, never grocery shop while you are hungry. Research has found that people who haven't eaten all afternoon and go shopping choose more high-calorie foods. I always recommend having some roasted pumpkin seeds, almonds, or dried fruit in your car to take off the edge. If you have never tried it, you will be very surprised how quickly a few nuts, seeds, or dried fruit makes you feel full. Just eat a few of those before you head into the grocery store. If possible, try to make one big trip a week, but also small, quick, short trips to buy fresh produce. That can make your life easier and healthier. If you don't have the time to pick up fresh vegetables a couple of times a week, use frozen vegetables. Most frozen vegetables are flash frozen, and studies suggest frozen veggies have as many nutrients as their fresh counterparts. Frozen vegetables can be especially helpful for those on a budget. They may not taste as fresh, but in a pinch, they fit the bill. If you're choosing fresh vegetables, avoid produce that is bruised or damaged. Also, choose ripe fruits and vegetables that are in season. The ripening process is a somewhat oxidatively stressful situation for plants, so they develop antioxidants to defend themselves, which make it even better for your body when you eat it. Some plants also see an increase in vitamin and mineral levels when they're ripe. Also, buy affordable fresh herbs whenever possible for flavor building. Try to plan a few meals that will use those same fresh herbs over and over again so you don't waste them. Okay, now let's reorganize your power-packed pantry and create a space for food that is practical. Having an uncluttered kitchen with only the necessary plant-based ingredients will make it easier for you to stay organized and stay on track. Spring is here, so just think of it as spring cleaning your kitchen. So, what should be in your healthy plant-based pantry? Let's use our vegan power plate as a guide and begin with grains. Always remember, if you want to eat the best, well-rounded vegan meal, you always include a whole grain. Whole grains contain all three parts of the grain: the bran, the germ, and the endosperm. Refined grains like white rice and white flour are refined because they have had their bran and germ removed, leaving only the endosperm. When the bran and germ are removed, you have lost about 25% of the grain's protein, you have lost over 50% of the fiber, and you have lost many key nutrients. Now let's talk about storing your grains properly, because it is one of the best ways to protect you and your family from bacteria. I like to store them in glass jars, which are overall safer for food storage than plastic. Chemicals from plastic can migrate into your food, especially when hot food is put into plastic or microwaving food in plastic containers. Never, ever microwave in plastic containers, even if they say they are microwave safe. Glass is also better for the earth because it reduces the amount of plastic trash. And once you buy a glass storage container, you can use it almost indefinitely. So let's get back to buying whole grains. Which whole grain should we buy? That depends on someone's palate, but I recommend organic brown rice, organic quinoa, organic oats, and organic farro for your whole grains. If you're gluten-free, you can remove the farro from the list. Now let's break it down. Quinoa's protein is complete, containing all 9 essential amino acids. It also contains more protein than most grains and can be eaten warm for breakfast, cold mixed in salads, or as a base for any stir fry. It is also gluten-free. Quinoa is a very easy and quick cooking grain. All you have to do is measure out your quinoa and double your liquid. For example, 1 cup of quinoa to 2 cups of water. You bring the water to a boil, you stir in the quinoa, then you turn the heat down to low and cover and simmer until all the liquid is absorbed. And that only takes about 15 minutes. Keep your eye on it, especially in the last 5 minutes. Then you let it sit covered for 2 to 3 minutes and fluff with a fork. Brown rice is also simple to prepare. All you do is bring 2 cups of water to a boil, add 1 cup of rice, reduce that to a simmer over low heat, cover the pot and cook for about 45 minutes or until the water is absorbed. If there's a little water on the bottom, just drain off the excess. You want the rice chewy and tender. If it still has a crunch, just add a little more water and continue cooking another 5 to 10 minutes and test it again. Oats are next. There always seems to be a question surrounding oats and gluten, and the question is whether they are gluten-free. The short answer is yes, oats are gluten-free, but some are grown in the same fields as wheat products. This might affect people with gluten sensitivity. The answer to that is to purchase brands that are labeled gluten-free organic. Oats are one of my favorite sources of protein, fiber, vitamins, and minerals. There is no better way to start your day than a bowl of cooked oats combined with some ground flax seeds or hemp seeds and covered with fruits, nuts, and a drizzle of maple syrup. Not only will it keep you full longer and faster, you will see a mountain and want to run up it. The resistant starch in oats is the type of starch that passes through the digestive tract unchanged. In other words, it resists digestion and keeps our blood sugar under control. And blood sugar under control can make you feel more energized than ever before. Oats are also rich in antioxidants and protein. I can't say enough good things about oats and the resistant starch that it contains. Cooking oats is so simple. Just bring 1 cup of water to a boil and stir in a 1/2 cup of oats and reduce the heat and cook for a minute. Then remove it from the heat, cover, and let it stand for 2 to 3 minutes. Couldn't be easier. And oats aren't just for breakfast. You can use oats as a base for muffins or veggie burgers. The next whole grain is a more unusual one. I choose it because it tastes different than most whole grains. It has a more complex, nutty, and elegant taste. And I know many people who use it as a meat replacer because it has a chewy texture when it's cooked. Farro also gets an A+ nutritional rating from me because of its high fiber and protein. You can also serve it warm, topped with fruits, nuts, seeds, and a drizzle of maple syrup for breakfast, or as a healthy side or base for any dish. There are 2 types of farro, semi-perlado, which means semi-pearled, and perlado, which means pearled. I like to use semi-pearled farro because it cooks in less time. When cooking farro, you cook farro like a dry pasta and use a 3-to-1 water to farro ratio. Always taste it in the last 5 minutes so it doesn't overcook. Cooking times are short, about 20 minutes, and once it is al dente, drain it. For an added nutty flavor, you can toast your farro in a dry skillet for a few minutes, making sure you don't burn it. Always remember to rinse your grains before placing any grain into a saucepan to cook. It helps with taste, and rinsing grains remove debris and other things like dust that accumulate in the bins. Okay, so now you have 4 large glass mason jars full of your high-protein, high-fiber grains, which is one of the most important components of your plant-based diet. Please try to include grains into your main meals every day if possible. Before I go to our next plant-based item for our pantry, I want to read a question that Mina sent to me. Hi, Nancy. I was wondering if you could dedicate an episode of your podcast to discuss how to properly soak our food. I have just realized that I have been soaking food improperly. After having done some research, it seems like it's not enough just soaking in water. You need to add a catalyst like lemon juice or kefir to properly break down the phytic acid, which is abundant in legumes and grains. The fact that you should also soak your flour was a new discovery for me. Hi, Mina. Thanks for reaching out, and that is the perfect question and segue into what's up in our pantry next, which are dried legumes, also known as beans and lentils, and we will also talk about flour. The very high protein in beans make them the perfect substitute for animal protein, and I like to include them in my diet every day. Legumes should also be stored in large glass mason jars and labeled. I recommend starting out with these four legumes: dried black beans, dried chickpeas, also known as garbanzo beans, white beans, and lentils. Beans need to be soaked before cooking. Soaking dry beans cut back cooking times and can reduce a compound called phytate and phytic acid, which is what Mina was asking about. Why do we need to reduce phytate levels? Phytate and phytic acid is known as a food inhibitor, which can deplete minerals from foods and limit the body's absorption of nutrients such as iron, zinc, and calcium. Soaking can help reduce the amount of phytates and phytic acid, but research suggests that soaking for 24 hours is way too long. A review of 33 studies that tested the effect of soaking beans or chickpeas found the greatest and most consistent decrease in phytate levels occurred when the beans or chickpeas were soaked for 12 hours. And other studies maintained that soaking beans and chickpeas for 12 hours also increases their overall nutritional value. So, soak your beans, but limit the soaking time to 12 hours. And an added benefit of soaking is that it can also reduce the complex sugars in beans, which can cause gas or bloating. Also, Mina asked about needing a catalyst ingredient when soaking foods with phytate. I was unable to find any studies that back that up, but I'm not surprised that people are adding ingredients like kefir because fermented foods have lower phytates and phytic acid. And despite the potential drawbacks of phytate, a little phytic acid may have its benefits because of its protective properties. Cooking beans is simple. You just put the beans into a soup pot and add water to cover them by 1 inch. I like to add a chunk of onion and a bay leaf, and you bring that to a boil. Reduce the heat to a simmer, partially cover the pot with a lid, and cook for about 50 to 60 minutes, stirring occasionally. And then just cook them until the beans are tender and creamy. All of the beans I recommend are packed with protein, complex carbs, fiber, and a powerhouse of antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals such as iron, manganese, folate, copper, potassium, and zinc. Beans make the perfect base for any soup, veggie burger, and even brownies. I will put a link in the show notes for my black bean brownies, which are getting rave reviews, and I promise no one will know there are black beans in them. Dried lentils, on the other hand, are much easier and quicker to cook. Also, they don't need to be soaked because they have low phytic acid levels. Use 3 cups of liquid to 1 cup of dry lentils. And be sure to use a large enough saucepan because the lentils double in size. You bring that to a boil, you cover it tightly, you reduce the heat, and simmer until they are tender, keeping a close eyeball on them. Cooking time is typically only 15 to 20 minutes. Always remember, most beans and lentils should be eaten within 3 days of cooking. Now, let's move on to flour for your power-packed, plant-based pantry. I recommend starting out with 2 flours, stone-ground garbanzo bean flour, which is gluten-free, and whole-grain wheat flour. If you are gluten-free, then I recommend buying whole-grain brown rice flour by companies like Bob's Red Mill in place of the whole-grain wheat flour. Another question Mina asked in her email is, should she be soaking her flour too to get rid of phytates and phytic acid? Here is what I found out. When cooking a recipe that calls for flour, some bakers and bread makers combine the flour they are going to use and the liquid the recipe calls for and soaks that combination overnight. This not only removes some of the phytate and phytic acids, the overnight soak softens the flour and breaks down the tough starches, giving it a better texture and flavor. For example, if you're making muffins and the muffins call for almond milk, you can soak the flour in the almond milk for 12 hours before making your recipe. Hope that makes sense. Now, let's talk about chickpea flour. Chickpea flour is my favorite because it has serious binding power. And when you don't cook with eggs, this comes in handy. It is also nutrient-packed and full of protein, fiber, and vitamins. My chickpea flour recipe obsession right now are chickpea omelets, also known as soca, which is essentially a large chickpea pancake from Provence. So, let's go into Ordinary Vegan's kitchen and make my favorite vegan omelet. To begin, heat up a sauté pan that's been spritzed with a little olive oil. Now, let's prepare the batter. In a large bowl, add 1 cup of chickpea flour, 1/2 cup of nutritional yeast, 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and some ground black pepper. Now, add 1 cup of water and whisk it until the batter is smooth. Add the batter to the hot sauté pan, and now you can pretty much sprinkle your chickpea omelet with any vegetables you want. But today I want to create a Mediterranean feel, so I'm using some chopped onions, sliced black olives, and chopped sun-dried tomatoes, and I just sprinkle it over the top. Then cook for 4 to 5 minutes on one side, or until it is firm enough to flip, much like a pancake. You don't want it to break. And then you gently fold it over one side to cook another couple of minutes until it is completely dry. You can serve it with salsa, sliced avocado, and top it with some chives or any fresh herb. Vegan, gluten-free, and packed with protein and fiber. What a great way to start your day. Also, I like to keep a little extra mixture in the fridge so I can have a pancake on the fly. Okay, so now we have 2 out of 5 of our healthy vegan food groups, in addition to our flour for our power-packed plant-based pantry. Now, let's add to that. I love dried cooked legumes, but sometimes I am too busy to prepare those, so I always have cooked beans in my plant-based pantry. I recommend at least 2 to 3 cans or cartons of cooked black beans, cooked garbanzo beans, and cooked cannellini beans. These can be used to make quick fresh soups, add to salads and stir fries, and I love mashing beans like garbanzo beans and making mock tuna sandwiches by adding celery, onion, pickles, and a little vegan mayo. Or make some fresh hummus or use the cooked black beans in a breakfast burrito. There are so many ways to use these cooked beans. Often, I will just sauté some cannellini beans with garlic and top them with some greens and seeds, and then I cover them and let the greens steam for a few minutes. Absolutely delicious and nutritious. There are endless possibilities for these inexpensive, nutrient-packed cooked beans. Your next pantry item and healthy plant-based food group number 3 are nuts, seeds, and dried fruits. Choose 2 of your favorite nuts and buy them in bulk. I always have hemp seeds, ground flax seeds, and chia seeds available. I keep my seeds refrigerated because this preserves the nutrient content. I always like to have some dried cherries or cranberries on hand for oatmeal or snacking and raisins for stews and muffins. Following a plant-based food program doesn't mean you have to sacrifice flavor or give up enjoying sweet or intense flavors. By using natural sweeteners, herbs, vinegars, and other ingredients, you can achieve the same flavor profiles just without the animal protein. So let's talk about some other plant-based power pantry staples to add flavor. I want to take a minute to talk about sweeteners. I get a lot of emails about sweeteners and which ones are the best to use, so I am going to break it down. There are many plant-based sweeteners that let us indulge now and then. I personally like dried fruits such as dates, and I like liquid sweeteners like maple syrup or very occasionally vegan cane sugar, date sugar, or maple sugar. I like pure stevia for coffee or sprinkled on oatmeal. Always avoid using aspartame, agave nectar, and sucralose. And here is why. As I mentioned on a previous podcast, aspartame is used in many diet sodas, and researchers are finding that drinking only 2 diet sodas a day can lead to a 500% greater increase in waist size. Furthermore, aspartame actually increases blood glucose levels, and that the formaldehyde in aspartame can cause cancer. So never use aspartame. It is in most diet drinks. Also, avoid agave nectar because many agave nectars consist of 70 to 90% fructose, which is more than what's found in high fructose corn syrup. Agave nectar is probably one of the worst sweeteners on the market that is deceptively marketed as healthy. Sucralose, also known as Splenda, is not natural. It is processed using chlorine. Sucralose also can't be broken down when it winds up in wastewater treatment plants and could put the entire food chain at risk. Next up are herbs and spices. Before I became plant-based, I never took my spices seriously. They sat in a drawer next to my stove for years. I am sad to say sometimes I would pick up a spice and wonder how old it was and see on the label it came from a grocery store in a city that I've not lived in over 10 years. I am very embarrassed to admit that, but that's me. I stick with things. Of course, now I would never keep a spice that is old. But let's move on. First, what is the difference between an herb and a spice? In the simplest terms, herbs are the green parts of the plant, the leaves and the stalks, while spices come from the roots, the bark, the seeds, the fruits, and the flowers. Generally, herbs are used fresh, while spices are used dried. Together, herbs and spices can bring delicious flavors and aromas to dishes made with everyday staples. When purchasing dried herbs, it is best to purchase them in small amounts. Dried herbs, especially delicate herbs like parsley, dill, tarragon, chives, basil, mint, cilantro, tend to lose their flavor over a short period of time. So it is best to buy from a store that has a high turnover and to use them very quickly. Dried herbs are best stored in tightly sealed containers. So, as I was mentioning before, if you are like me, it is easy to forget how long you've had a particular herb, so it would make sense to mark each bottle with your purchase date to make it easy to know when it should be replaced. Most people recommend to replace your spices every 6 months to a year. I know what you're saying. I don't want to replace all these expensive spices. The best way to find out if a spice needs replacing is to taste it and smell it before you're adding them to a recipe. The last thing you need is to ruin an entire recipe because of old spices. So taste them and smell them. And if they have a weak or stale aroma or bitter aftertaste, that means that your dried herb needs to be replaced. Light and heat will cause dried herbs to rapidly lose their flavor. And the very worst place to store dried herbs is above or near a stove. always store them in a cool, dark place like your pantry and store them in tightly sealed containers. When substituting dried herbs for fresh herbs, less is required. As a general rule, use a 1-to-3 ratio of dried to fresh. For example, if a recipe calls for 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, you will use 3 teaspoons of fresh oregano, and vice versa. And when cooking with herbs, make sure to crush and rub them before adding them to a dish. This will help them add more true flavor. When herbs are combined with other foods and liquids, they can add wonderful and complex flavors. But it is also important to know when to add them to the cooking process. When you're cooking with hardy herbs like rosemary, thyme, sage, and bay leaves, they can be added at the beginning because they are robust and can withstand longer cooking times. When cooking with delicate herbs like parsley, dill, tarragon, chives, basil, mint, cilantro, they are generally added at the end. They can't tolerate long cooking times or high heat. Delicate herbs are used to finish a dish, and you want them to maintain their color. Sometimes I will use a dried herb like basil in the beginning and finish it with some fresh basil leaves at the end. It is much safer to add too little of an herb than too much. You can always add more, and you don't want a dried herb to overpower a dish. I like pairing hearty herbs with each other and stronger tasting foods. And then I pair delicate herbs with each other in milder tasting foods. Always remember your herbs should balance a dish and not mask the flavors of the primary ingredient. The only other spices I want to mention are salt and ground black pepper. I recommend a quality sea salt for cooking. You use less and most are not heavily processed like table salt. Spices always taste the best when they are freshly ground, which is why I always recommend fresh ground black pepper. It is easy to find in grocery stores, and you don't have to buy fancy grinders if you don't want to. Stock your pantry with quality vinegars, which can be used when creating all kinds of dressing and vinaigrettes. Balsamic vinegar is one of the most popular, and a quality balsamic can make all the difference, and a little goes a long way. I also recommend a mild white vinegar like champagne vinegar, rice vinegar, and a couple of bold vinegars like apple cider vinegar and red wine vinegar. These are the vinegars that I use in most of my recipes. I also use Marin frequently. Marin is a sweetened white wine rice vinegar, and it adds a sweetness and flavor to your dishes, sauces, and glazes. You can find it in the Asian section of your grocery store. Another essential plant-based ingredient is nutritional yeast. Nutritional yeast is an inactive yeast and often used for its cheesy flavor. It also has tons of nutrients, including B vitamins, zinc, and protein. There are so many unexpected ways to use nutritional yeast. Add a cheesy taste to pasta or popcorn, or mash it into a baked potato, or make my new favorite recipe, mock fried egg sandwich with a runny yolk. This recipe was inspired by an email I received from one of our community members, Derek and Diana. Here's what they asked. Dear Nancy, first of all, we listen to your podcast on a device made for the blind. We started on a plant-based diet in May of 2017 for health reasons. We have been enjoying the journey. At first, it was hard to get used to, but some new foods made it taste good and refreshing. The health benefits started right away. We have a question about egg replacers. We were using egg beaters for my diabetes, which is not vegan. I wish I could get that through people's head. It is egg whites, Anyway, we have tried several vegan alternatives, Bob's Red Mill, Follow Your Heart, and so on. Some don't mix well with starchy stuff. Do you have ideas about egg replaces? I heard about flaxseed, but mine come out all lumpy when I add water. Please help if you can. Thank you, Derek and Diana. So, this recipe is for Derek and Diana, and it is a vegan fried egg with a runny yolk. I know we don't usually go into Ordinary Vegan's Kitchen twice in a podcast, but what the heck? It's our podcast and we can do anything we want, right? Also, this doesn't take long, so let's hop into Ordinary Vegan's Kitchen again today and prepare it. If you don't like tofu, serve your vegan egg yolk simply with toast. Let's begin by making the vegan yolk. All you do is add 1 cup of water, 1 tablespoon plus 1 teaspoon of cornstarch, 2 tablespoons of unflavored soy or almond milk, 1 tablespoon of nutritional yeast, 1/4 teaspoon of turmeric, and some fresh ground black pepper and about 1/4 teaspoon of salt. By the way, if you really miss this type of runny egg yolk and want to get fancy, you can add 1/4 teaspoon of kala namak, which hopefully I'm pronouncing right. It is a Himalayan black salt that has a sulfuric egg flavor. So just whisk all those ingredients together over medium-high heat and continue to whisk until it cooks for about 3 to 5 minutes or until the vegan yolk sauce thickens. Taste for seasonings, and now you could serve this with some vegan buttered toast. Or you can create the vegan egg white by turning a block of tofu on its side and cutting it into thin slices. Melt some vegan butter in a frying pan and lightly fry and brown the tofu slices. Once the tofu slices are cooked, remove them from the pan and make a small round circle in the middle of the fried tofu. You can do it with a shot glass, cookie cutter, or knife. I used a heart-shaped cookie cutter. Now all you do is fill the hole with the vegan yolk dipping sauce, season, and serve the extra dipping sauce on the side. That is it. Vegan fried egg with runny center. You could make this like a vegan Benedict or pop it between 2 slices of bread. Thanks to Derek and Diana for the inspiration. Now let's get back to that plant-powered pantry. Other pantry staples should include vegetable broth, hot sauces, gluten-free tamari, baking powder, water chestnuts, capers, artichokes in water, tomato products, whole grain pastas, white miso paste, and organic tapioca starch. And please make sure these staples do not have added oils and choose low sodium options when available. Now, all you do is open that pantry door and create a vegan power plate, a grain, a legume, a healthy fat, and grab some veggies from the fridge or the freezer and some fruit for dessert. It's that simple. That is all you need to provide you with all the nutrients necessary in a healthy plant-based diet. And this can be a soup or a stir fry or just a simple plate of beautiful food. In the next podcast, we will discuss what should be in a vegan plant-powered refrigerator. We will also discuss dry heat cooking methods without oil and creating healthy vegan sauces and salad dressings. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am always here to serve you, and I am always hoping that I am doing a good job because my number one goal is to help you live a long and healthy life. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave a review and rating in iTunes. As I have said before, iTunes works in mysterious ways, and the more ratings and reviews, the more opportunity for me to reach people with our plant-based message. I love you guys so much. Please keep those comments, shares, and emails coming because I so enjoy hearing from you. As many of you know, I now endorse and sell CBD oil from hemp because I believe in the healing qualities. I just interviewed an interesting man named John Lyons who is building a hemp institute that will have a medical and research treatment center, a short-term stay facility, and an end-of-life center that will focus on the powers of CBD oil from hemp instead of pharmaceuticals to help people with a multitude of illnesses. He said this on the podcast, and it really resonated with me because this is exactly the reason I believe in CBD oil from hemp. Here is what he said. There is a revolution going on. We are learning that we don't have to only rely on pharmaceuticals for common chronic diseases like chronic pain, inflammation, and anxiety disorders. And what is driving the business of CBD oil is not the pharmaceutical industry, and it is not the medical industry. It is the people. People who were backed up against a wall, and they were willing to try anything. And they tried CBD oil, and it worked. Mothers who smuggled CBD oil into hospitals for their children, knowing if they got caught, they were risking so much, but they would do anything for their children. It is people like that who are driving the message about CBD oil. It is normal people like you and I who are taking CBD by the reins and spreading the word. Hopefully, the pharmaceutical industry will never have the power to regulate this natural remedy from the hemp plant and charge thousands of dollars for it. You can find safe, reliable vegan CBD oil on my website, ordinaryvegan.net. Look forward to our next podcast and part two of our plant-powered kitchen. In the meantime, join us on facebook.com/ordinaryvegan, where there are over 317,000 community members hanging out, sharing their compassion, their opinions, and they're waiting to embrace you. So please join us. I will post this week's recipes and podcast show notes at ordinaryvegan.net/the-podcast. If you have any questions or feedback, please email me at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Thanks for being here. Till next time.
Thanks for joining our plant-based community today. Together, we can accomplish great things. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of Ordinary Vegan's recipes and plant-based tips. If you have any questions or feedback, email us at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Until next time.